All right, our next case, final case, is Aiken versus Sanchez and Becerra.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Erin Sperger, and I'm here on behalf of the appellant, Morgan Aiken, who is also here at council table. I'd like to reserve 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
Thank you. So, Your Honors, there, as you probably saw in the briefing, there are a lot of issues in this case, but it all pretty much boils down to a pretty simple thing that happened. And this court should reverse the order of sanctions against Mr. Aiken in the amount of over $53,000 and the order of dismissal with prejudice and the order denying motion to leave, because an objective observer, an informed objective observer who knows about implicit and explicit bias, could view race as a factor in the court's decision. And there are three things in the record that I want to point out that support this. There's three sort of categories. Number one is that Becerra invoked harmful racial stereotypes in her motion to dismiss and in her motion for sanctions. Number two is that the sanctions were not based on the law because none of Mr. Aiken's claims were actually frivolous, and they were not barred by anti-SLAPP. And then
Counsel,
number three.
Were the allegations of racial bias raised before the trial court?
They were not, but it is, and it's a constitutional issue, Your Honor, because, and again, we have the example of the Henderson case where the Supreme Court, like, they don't have to be raised below. This court has a duty to stamp out racial bias wherever it may be found, and we didn't know so racial bias wasn't part of the underlying claims. It's how the court treated him as a litigant. So these claims wouldn't even have arisen until after the summary judgment.
Well, I thought you just said that the racial bias was partly because of the way that the property manager described him. But now you're telling us it's the way that the court treated him. So what did the court do that would reveal some sort of racial bias other than rule against him?
Sure. So the court, that's a good question, because what the court did was exactly what it did in Henderson. It relied on the litigants, Becerra in particular, her harmful racial stereotypes, that black men are violent, that they're predators, that she accused him of cutting her brake lines, she accused him of all this stuff that was not supported by anything in the record. And just like in Henderson, what she did in that motion was she distorted the roles of the plaintiff and the defendant. They were there because Becerra was harassing Aiken, not the other way around. But she turned it around and used stereotypes and said, oh, he's aggressive. One of the most egregious things was actually that she said that he had filed this lawsuit for the sole purpose of harassing her, and her evidence of that, and this is what the sanction order was based on, not anything in the law. It was based on the fact the court issued sanctions because it relied on Becerra's distortion of the roles and her harmful racial stereotypes. So one example is that Becerra said, when I was looking into his windows, he was watching violent things on TV. And then the court used that, he relied on that, to say, yeah, I actually agree with Becerra and Sanchez that this plaintiff only filed this lawsuit for the purpose of harassing them, which there is absolutely no evidence of. So this was also a little bit complicated by the fact that the motion to dismiss, it started out as a motion to dismiss under the 12B6 standard. And they moved for that because they said there was nothing on the pleadings that would possibly, they couldn't state any facts that would support a cognizable claim. And that is wrong on the law. If you look at, he only had
Ultimately, the court did look at it as a summary judgment because there was evidence in the record. Isn't that right?
It did, but if you look at what the court actually considered, he only looked at evidence outside the record for the purpose of sanctions. So he, when looking at whether or not to sanction him, the court allowed evidence to come in from Becerra that, hey, she felt harassed. She accused him. She said, I'm afraid he's going to cut my brake lines. He attacked my car with an ice pick. None of that was substantiated whatsoever. There was no evidence in the record for that. And so the court, the problem is that the court...
Did you make specific challenges to findings of fact that supported those sanctions?
No, Your Honor, because there was... No, because it permeated everything. The racial bias permeated everything. So what the argument is that it violates the Sixth Amendment. So when the trial court is not partial, it violates the Sixth Amendment, which is a constitutional issue.
But and in Henderson, we had a motion for a new trial. And isn't that what the Supreme Court said was the remedy, was to go back, and if there's a certain amount of evidence, that is the trial court's job to have that hearing about bias. But in this case, we didn't have the opportunity. The trial court didn't have that opportunity, so it wasn't raised.
That's true, because it's a little bit procedurally different from Henderson, where there they had a trial and there was a chance to ask for a new trial. So here there was no such opportunity. This is the first opportunity he has to challenge this. I mean, I suppose he could have done reconsideration or something like that, but you're not required to do reconsideration.
So I'm clear, your argument about considering evidence outside the record for sanctions is about the anti-SLAPP sanctions. Because certainly the CR-11 sanctions
all
are about
of the
conduct
sanctions.
That took place, right? Bringing claims that aren't supported by the facts. I mean,
that's
the basis of CR-11.
Correct.
So you're not talking about those sanctions. You're talking about the anti-SLAPP sanctions.
No, I'm talking about all of the sanctions, because his claims were not frivolous. And so if you look at how this case progressed... Right, he filed one complaint.
I think you misunderstood my question.
Oh, sure.
You were talking about the court considering facts that weren't before it, and that's kind of how this turned into a summary judgment motion. And you said the court only considered facts that weren't before it for the purpose of sanctions. There are different types of sanctions here.
Correct.
I'm saying that the anti-SLAPP sanctions, is that what you're saying the court looked outside the record to determine whether the anti-SLAPP sanctions were appropriate? Because the CR-11 sanctions, you wouldn't have to look outside the record, right? It's based on whether or not the claims were frivolous and the person's action in the course of litigating the action.
That's what should happen. But in this instance, the court also looked at facts outside the record for outside the pleadings for CR-11 sanctions. Because the reason he imposed those CR-11 sanctions was because the trial court agreed with Becerra that the only reason that he filed this lawsuit was for the purpose of harassing her, which was not true according to the record. The claims are not frivolous. If you look through the briefing, a couple of big reasons why it's not frivolous is because he brought breach of warranty of the quiet covenant of quiet use and enjoyment. And that was not frivolous. The property manager is a landlord under the statute. And I can address the rest when I come back on rebuttal. Thank you.
Thank you, counsel.
May I please the court, excuse me, you can tell it's spring. Sorry. May I please the court, Keith Scully. I represent Ms. Sanchez, who was the apartment building manager at the time. I've been in this case from the start. I represented the apartment complex in the first lawsuit, then Ms. Sanchez in the second lawsuit. Ms. Becerra is the neighbor. She had her own attorney throughout. Mr. Aiken has been treated with courtesy throughout, at least in the interactions I've been present with. I sent him several letters saying, hey, here's what the law is. Please don't do this. Judge in the first case warned him, dismissed without prejudice. Judge Rule gave him every opportunity to present his case. He considered stuff that was properly outside of the record. He considered amended complaints which had not been properly moved to amend. He was treated with respect throughout. But more than that, the sanctions are because there's never been a legal theory that you can get a remedy against an apartment building manager who sent you two noise warnings.
That certainly explains the CR-11 sanctions, but what about the anti-SLAPP sanctions?
So the anti-SLAPP sanctions were only imposed against him for the lawsuit against Ms. Becerra. And those anti-SLAPP sanctions were based upon Ms. Becerra reporting to 911 and then being sued for that report. That's the basis for it. And honestly, the stuff about the ice pick and the looking through the window, I trust that's in the record. That sure didn't come to the hearing. I don't have any memory of that. This case was not about what Ms. Becerra was doing. It was about whether Mr. Aiken could come up with a legal theory. And when he couldn't, you know, he was sanctioned under Rule 11. And quite frankly, the last comment up here is the only one I want to address on the law. My client is the apartment building manager. She can't be sued for breach of a lease. The covenant of quiet enjoyment comes through a lease breach. So she's not the right party for that. She can be sued under the RLTA, but the RLTA creates a list of duties. She violated none of them. There is no legal theory here.
If the lease had expired and they're in a month-to-month tenancy, is there a lease to breach?
Probably not, but there certainly isn't a lease to breach with Ms. Sanchez, who's an employee of the company who owns the premises. Contract just doesn't apply to an individual employee, right? I mean, the employer can be liable for things the employee does. The employee cannot be liable because the employer has allegedly breached a contract. All right, unless the court has
questions. You've got the definition of a landlord in the RLTA that does encompass other people, including a property manager, right?
For purposes of the RLTA only. But the RLTA does not change contract law. The RLTA says, here's a list of duties that both the premises owner and the employees have to meet. And it's a very specific list of duties, and none of them were breached here. It just doesn't apply. Unless the court has further questions, I don't have anything further. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, real quick, Your Honors. So, under the July 12th complaint that Mr. Aiken filed, there were only two claims in that complaint. It was breach of warranty, or a covenant of quiet use and enjoyment, and conspiracy.
And so what lease was breached for the covenant of use and enjoyment?
I'm sorry,
what lease was breached? There wasn't a lease in place, was there?
There was no lease in place, but the common law allows, it defines that breach as when a landlord, which is defined under the LTA to include Sanchez, when a landlord interferes with the tenant's use of the property, which Aiken alleged that she did. I'm not saying these claims are necessarily meritorious, but they're not frivolous. And in summary judgment, Mr. Aiken actually asked the court, he said, I would recommend that you treat this as a landmark case because this is a new issue. So I know that pro ses are generally treated the same as lawyers, but to me, that was a request for a good faith extension of the law, which specifically precludes sanctions under CR 11.
Let me understand if I'm getting the argument straight about the breach of the implied covenant. So the argument is that by giving him notice of complaints about noise, that breached his right to quiet enjoyment?
So that's how the respondent has characterized this, but this was not just because she served him a notice. As Mr. Aiken put in his complaint, the breach of the quiet use and enjoyment is the fact that Becerra made criminal complaints against him to the police. And then even after the police determined that those allegations were false, she still kept complaining to Sanchez, and Sanchez and Becerra conspired together to evict him. Sanchez said, I'm going to rely on your complaints without doing any sort of investigation. And that's where the conspiracy claim comes in. So again, I agree, these claims may not have been meritorious. He didn't know exactly what claims to bring because he's not a lawyer, but they're definitely not frivolous.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you.
All right, and we are in recess.
Court is in recess.